What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the number one sports podcast in the Southeast Metro Detroit region. It's Teaming Up with C&B. My name is Connor. Yes, that's what the C stands for. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, the V. It stands for Vladdy. What's going on, man? Good to chat with you on this Tuesday evening.
Not much. I'm kind of settling back into the routine of work and everything that kind of comes with that, gym and everything. All the New Year's resolutioners have made their way to the gyms, and I'm kind of finally noticing it for the first time. I got back from Bulgaria Thursday, went to the gym Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, but never really truly noticed it. And then today, there were multiple iterations or instances where just in between exercises, I was walking around for 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes at a time, just trying to find something available. And it really pisses me off. I hate people, and I cannot wait for February 1st for all the stupid resolutioners to go back to being fat.
Yeah. I know you go to a bigger box gym, so like it's harder for that to be a problem, but that is why, like, New Year's resolutioners aside, I can't get myself to work out in the evening, like 4 p.m. in that 4 to 7 slot, just because that's when everybody works out. And I can't stand waiting for machines. It's just, like, it makes me feel like my workout is even more useless than it actually is. I don't
Yeah,
know
I
why.
mean, in years past, it's never been this bad, and I don't know, maybe this is just the recency bias, but like it was I have not seen a gym
Oh,
this
I'm
bad
sure.
since like I Am West, and I'm a little shocked because like you expect the New Year's resolutioners to go to like a Planet Fitness or an Edge,
Sure.
and shameless plug here, but like
That's
I
true.
would not expect someone to say, "Oh yeah, let me try the gym for $200 a month at Lifetime." So I have been wholly surprised by what I saw today. Hopefully that was a one-off occurrence, but it was awful.
That is a good point
Other
with
than
the
that,
New Year's resolutioners.
yep. Other than that, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, dude. Similar, getting back in the groove of things. I've got started school yesterday. I definitely have the senior schedule. All my core classes are done that are going to be on the bar. So I take a bar prep class and then a lot of just electives that don't, I'm not going to talk down on them, but they don't mean as much as they probably did to me 2 years ago at this time.
Talking like
So
tennis and underwater basket weaving, or like
not
something
quite
still
like
law
that.
related.
Not quite like that. Like, we're talking like, it wouldn't even make sense in the name of some of these courses. But yeah, on top of that, just being in the, it's a shame that they make like New Year's resolutions and getting in shape at like the hardest time to do it in Michigan, because I hate the cold and refuse. I just went for a walk outside to try and get some steps in because I worked all day and sat at a desk. And man, I know that this is like preaching to the choir because I haven't had as much 9 to 5 experience as you at this point. It's like, it's hard to fucking get those steps in when you work a 9 to 5 and sit in a cubicle for a good chunk of the day.
See, that's why I go to the gym on my way home, because I know if I make it to home, I'm never leaving the house again.
Right.
So it's just A, the gym's on the way home, but it's just I once I get home, I log off from kind of productivity, and it kind of turns into pseudo brain rot time. We open up the Instagram reels and stare at 6 second just moronic clips of people on the internet. So
Yeah. And the internet's good at that these days.
yes, they're very good at it.
But this side of the internet, on this podcast, we're here to talk about sports. Kind of a full episode today. We've finally gotten some Michigan State basketball to get in today. We'll go over the college football playoff that's going to be happening Thursday and Friday. We'll talk about the Lions, the conclusion of their season, and week 18 of the NFL and those storylines, and then go through each playoff game for that. So a lot of previewing and a lot of football, as always, kind of the fun time of the year for this podcast. So I hope you guys enjoy this show. Let's get into it. Michigan State basketball. Since we last talked, one game against Ohio State at Ohio State Friday night. I'm going to start with this. The game was on Fox. Gus Johnson should not be allowed to call college basketball. Jim Jackson, bad, whatever. He was off his game. I know he's a basketball player. I know he was in Ohio. I didn't know he was an Ohio State guy until they showed it on the broadcast. Gus Johnson couldn't name a single player on that court for 40 minutes straight. I mean, the amount of names he got wrong, the amount of like lack of interest he had in like what was a pretty good game was, and he just talked about Ohio State football instead, was just, it was, and I know this is just nitpicking because who was watching that game besides Michigan State and Ohio State fans? And are there any Ohio State basketball fans? I don't really know. But yeah, that's just my ultimate critique. Let's get into the game. I believe the score was 69-62. Michigan State comes out with a win. They start 3-0 in Big Ten play. Do you want to kick it off? Do you want me to kick it off?
I mean,
Do you want?
I'll go on the larger kind of higher scale review of the game, and I'll let you get into more of the nitty-gritty and then respond back. But first half, kind of back and forth, opened up a lead to start the second, let it disappear, kind of in classic Michigan State fashion, and then just slowly hammered away in the last 10 minutes to kind of make it a win. I thought the biggest thing was free throws, the difference between us and them, and that's crazy because if you've listened to this, if you've ever watched a Michigan State basketball game in the last probably even 10 years, you know that Michigan State historically, or not in recent history, does not do the whole free throw thing very well as a team. And I think this is something we noted back in November when they were playing some of their kind of Maui games, the Champions Classic, that they were actually doing well at that. The turnover's still kind of there, but I think the free throws were the difference in this game. So I was good to see. I mean, you look around, rebounding seems relatively even. The shooting was bad on both sides, but that's just what Michigan State basketball is. So.
Yeah, like you mentioned, the biggest thing for me is this was just another very poor shooting performance. You can't like ream them too much because Ohio State was equally as bad, if not worse, in
Oh,
that
absolutely.
game.
Yeah, I meant like the game as a whole. I'm not even just specifically talking Michigan State in that regard.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was especially early on in the first half, it was just an absolute brick fest. And then Michigan State kind of was able to get it down low early to the big. Sapala had his best probably day as a Spartan, 15 points. And I believe 10 or 12 of them in the first half. He was just getting easy looks. They had a couple of good matchups. Their only real big was more of a threat offensively and wasn't really much on the Bradshaw kid. Didn't really have much going for him on defense. Kohler kind of was able to feed. And it kind of, I mean, it's one game, but from what I've seen, it's got to be, if you want to go two bigs, it's got to be those two. Carson Cooper, I'll talk about Frankie Fiddler later, both kind of a game where they saw themselves on the outside looking in of the rotation right now. And as you start to narrow it down the stretch, something to look out for. In the second half, they actually shot the ball well for about the first 5 minutes and got a ton of nice looks. And then, like you said, it was Michigan State. We're going to forget how to score a basket. It's getting tough. And to their credit, they made it hard on Ohio State. That run where it took Ohio State to go, I think Michigan State got it up to 12 or 13 at one point. And for it to come back and Ohio State came back and took the lead with 7 or 8 minutes left, it took them almost 10 minutes a clock to do that because they were still playing good defense throughout that run. Ohio State starts making their shots, they have to fall eventually type thing. And you, instead of falling over like last year's team would have, crawled back, found a way to get buckets. They weren't always easy. You found what worked. Jaden Akins had to hit a couple shots. I'd like to see him take over games a little more. Like I hate like making references to last year's team that was so bad, but I want to see a little like Tyson Walker, like when the game's on the line, like you know who's going to take the shot. I'm not, he's our best player, but I'm not necessarily sure if the game's on the line that Jaden Akins is going to be ISO ball trying to make the last shot go in type thing. That's something I'd like to see more of. You mentioned the free throws. Not only was it good and the difference in this game, but from who they came from. Cohen Carr, I think, went 8 of 9 or 8 of 10 from the free throw line in that game. Down the stretch, made a bunch of big free throws. Kohler also made a couple free throws. Guys that are not, I'm going to single out Cohen Carr because he's found a nice role in this rotation. And that, I mean, we messed around a couple weeks ago when he made his first three in almost two seasons, but he is able to get inside, make moves, uses athleticism much more than last year. And for a guy that's a horrible shooter, he's been a fairly good free throw shooter down the stretch the last couple of weeks. And it's good to see actual development out of some of these players, which I'm going to compliment Izzo on, that it seems like this younger group, these freshmen and sophomores, listen to him. And
Yeah.
they've got a good leadership group. It seems like Jaden Akins, Tom Izzo said they got back to East Lansing that night. Tom and Akins, like unprompted, got up in front of the team and said, listen, like that's a game we would have lost last year. We lost five or six of those games last year. And they did. And they found a way not to. Now, I don't think Ohio State's been all over the map themselves. I don't know where this like actually puts you as far as like, was it a good win? Is it a quad one win, a quad two win? Right now, it's probably a quad one win, but I saw some highlights of them taking a horrible Minnesota team to two overtimes last night. So who knows how good this team is? And I know they're very young too. And I got a couple of freshmen that really impressed me. That Mobley kid kind of gave us fits the whole night, the guards fits. But outlook, they're going to play. I don't know why they don't play again until Thursday. Like, now that we're in Big Ten play, why did they get 6 days off? I thought that was odd. But they'll play Thursday night against Washington, a team they should beat. We've mentioned it. It's a relatively easy January for this team. They'll play a ranked Illinois team. There's only three teams in the Big Ten not named Michigan State ranked right now. So it's not like that's saying that's a big deal to be playing a ranked team, I guess, even though it's the Big Ten and it shouldn't be. I guess the SEC is hogging all of them. But yeah, I don't know. Like you look at down the stretch, I think they found who's going to be in and who's going to be out. I think you've kind of narrowed it down to where I don't see Frankie Fiddler and I don't see Carson Cooper playing much of a role on this team right now. They just don't create anything. If Frankie Fiddler's not getting to the line, he's kind of
He's
useless. And I
useless.
actually thought he maybe played 5 minutes in that game. I thought he had a couple of okay defensive sets, but like that's not what he's here to do. He averaged 21 points a game last year. He's here to score, and if he can't do that, he's not going to play. And then the bigs are going to shuffle. I think Xavier Booker offensively has found, despite the fact that he thinks he's a shooter and hasn't made one three in his Michigan State career, has found a nice little stride and found himself a little bit more. And is playing with much more confidence defensively than he did last year, to where I think he's probably your third option over Carson Cooper right now.
Yeah, if, obviously people can't see what, but as soon as you mentioned his name, I just did the eye roll because this guy, like you say, he jacks up threes and like he doesn't even wait for a green light. He steps into them like he's Steph Curry going for the heat check. It's ridiculous. And all of them are like ugly misses, back
Yeah.
iron bouncing 45 feet away. I hate seeing him pull it. Like, if you're gonna be open and like because let's say someone collapsed on a guard who drove, that's one thing. But if you're trying to sit here, take a walk-in three it with 25 seconds left on the
Yeah.
clock, I do not need to see that from him.
Yeah.
You mentioned the player development. It looks like we're on track to develop a player for the first time since Xavier Tillman. We love to see that. And then the last thing I want to say is I actually think the score wasn't totally indicative of how this. I actually think we beat them by more. And you mentioned, I think it was Mobley who was just hitting some of those circus shots, especially at the end to keep it close. And like you say, to keep us as fans nervous of, oh my God, they're hanging around. But I think the defense was incredible. So
Yeah,
proud
it
of
was.
that.
And sorry, did you have something else?
No, I was just going to say proud of that.
Oh, yeah. Like the Thornton kid had 2 30-point games the two games prior. You held him to, I think, 1 point in the first half and 10 in the game. That's something where guys' best players in the past couple of years, I think it's Zach Edey. I know that's not really a fair comparison, but
Tominaga.
no, yeah. Guys' best players have gone off on runs on you. And to have and silence their best scorer was nice to see.
Agreed.
Let's move on to a different college sport. College football. No games since we last spoke, but now we're going to get into the normal college football playoff. We can start in chronological order as the games will go. Sorry, let me just pull up the spread. I want to get the spreads right. Notre Dame, Penn State. in the Orange Bowl. Notre Dame is currently a 1.5 point favorite. I've seen that as high as 3. Total over 44.5. Wow, that's low for a college football game. And I think that's indicative of how this game is going to be. This is going to be fun in a football nerd type of way. I think these teams, Ohio State overall, these teams as far, and I know Penn State has played two teams that they should bully in the trenches, but these two teams in the trenches, in the fronts, with the big boys have impressed me the most in their both of their two games. And I know Notre Dame played Indiana too, but this is going to be ugly. It's going to be whichever team runs the ball the most, whichever team can game plan the most. What else do you have for me besides? I think these might be the two best quarterbacks left.
I'm just gonna say this is a good old-fashioned race to 20, maybe
Yeah.
24 points. Some maybe a Big Ten football game from 10, 15 years ago of just line it up in I form, give me the 13 personnel, and just say let's see who, like you said, who can dominate the trenches. And you're perfectly kind of encapsulating it. This is gonna be a nerd's game. I don't see there being eye candy. I mean, do you have skill position players other than Kyler Warren? I don't think so. I mean, the running backs are great, but
Running
the running
backs.
backs,
Yeah.
there's no Jeremiah Smith. There's no flashy 5-star receivers anywhere. So this is, like I said, this is the battle of the trenches. I'm not sure I agree with the whole quarterbacks thing, and that for me, it's more of just a how guys are playing right now. I think I'm gonna have to go with Will Howard, the hot hand.
Is
Because
hot. Yeah.
no, and all four of these guys are wholly uninspiring. Like, I'm not gonna sit
Yeah.
here and pretend like there's some gross like difference in class and we've got like a CJ Stroud and then a Max Duggan on the other side like we had a couple years ago. No, this is just they're all the same quarterback, to be completely honest. It's mid, 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 and mid, and we'll get to the other two, but for this one, both Drew Aller and Riley Leonard have kind of been game managers, and that's fine. Both of them, or at least Riley Leonard, I think a little bit more so than Aller, has been able to make some plays in the
His feet.
anticipation slash scrambling drill where he just takes off and picks up a first down that he really shouldn't. So that'll be something that Penn State will kind of have to keep him in check and limit the kind of the again the improvising from Drew Aller. I don't know. He keeps getting talked about like he's this like hyped up person, but he's coming back to school as evidenced by the other Penn State kid transferring away.
I don't even know if he's draft eligible. Oh yeah, he is. He's a
He
true
is.
junior. Yeah.
But we'll see. I'm gonna lean Penn State just because I think the complement of players around Drew Aller is better than what Notre Dame can offer. You have the two running backs, Catron Allen, Nick Singleton. You have Tyler Warren. And then when I flip it around to the Notre Dame side, after Jeremiah Love, I'm kind of left with some question marks and a little bit to be desired. Maybe the defenses change things and completely keep everything in check, but I'm going to take the Penn State side here.
Yeah, I was gonna disagree with you and say I slightly lean Notre Dame, just because of how impressive they looked up front against Georgia. And I think this is a slight step back from that in some respects with Penn State, not necessarily on offense, but on defense. But I'm looking at this, and if Penn State can win in the trenches and kind of do what they did, like you said, with Love, as they did against Gentile last week. I'm looking at Leonard's not like only 2,300 passing yards all year. Their leading receiver only has 420 yards and 3 touchdowns. It seems like if you could shut down the run, I mean, obviously we mentioned Riley Leonard and him being able to scramble, but you should be okay against them. And this is something like they haven't seen other than Georgia on their schedule this year in Notre Dame. I just really, really. And worried about Penn State on offense
Are
and
you
what they're.
worried about James Franklin going full James Franklin?
I'm very worried about James. I'm worried of their offensive coordinator, who I didn't really love the game plan against Boise State in general. And if you're not gonna like, you might have to do what you did in that game, is the weird part, is In the Boise State game, I talked about it last week. They ran for 8 yards, 9 yards a carry. It felt like you kept trying to air it out to guys that weren't open. You might have to be, this might be the game where you have to take shots. You have to find Tyler Warren on some tricky plays because you're not going to get 9 yards a carry against this Notre Dame front. And for that reason, and I know Marcus Freeman hasn't been there. I trust Marcus Freeman slightly more than James Franklin in these types of games. We say Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin.
Nice.
James Franklin can't win the big game. These first two playoff games against Mid-America were not big games. Notre Dame to go to the national championship is a big game. Give me the Fighting Irish. 24-16.
16. Interesting. But yeah, the last thing I'll say is, and I brought this up, is if Penn State can take care of the football, which is not easy. Notre Dame is very good at taking it away, but if they do not give them free possessions, I like I said, I'm rocking with Penn State.
All right. You got a score?
No, Penn State.
All right. All right. Then we'll move on to the Cotton Bowl, or the home game for the Texas Longhorns, where they'll face what many are deeming the national championship already, the Ohio State Buckeyes. The line's at 5.5 right now. I've seen that one as high as 7 for Ohio State. And it's, I don't want to say like, how hard are you going to come back to earth is for Ohio State from having the perfect game, the revenge game against the team that beat you, where you didn't basically the ball didn't hit the ground while you were playing, basically on offense. And now you go and you have to play. I know Oregon has a respectable defense, but now you have to go and play. And we just talked about how good both the other two teams were up front. This Texas team is even better. I think this is the best defense left among the four teams. Say what you want, Ohio State's got some dogs themselves. I'm not worried about them overall. It's just how hard are they going to come back to earth because it's just not going to go as perfectly as it went last week.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think all four of the teams have incredible defenses left.
Yeah.
Obviously, Notre Dame, great. Penn State, Abdul Carter running around like a maniac. Ohio State's got the players everywhere, and Caleb
Downs.
Downs, just they gave him free reins to do what he wants. And you're right, Texas as well. So there is that, but I don't think on the offensive side they can score with Ohio State. I'm not going to sit here and predict another bludgeoning because how can you really do that? But I do think that you're going to be looking at a game where I think Texas falls behind and then it kind of turns into a you score, we score. The only issue is our score is to make it, so we're only down by a score. That's I depicted that terribly for the people who are just listening,
I
but
understood you.
yeah, I just don't think that Texas has enough. I think Quinn Ewers has been, like I said, outside of three throws against Arizona State, I think he's been wholly unimpressive. Steve Sarkisian, it looks like he's doing his best Ryan Day and James Franklin impressions with some of the coaching decisions or lack thereof that have been going on with Texas. And like you said, yes, you're never going to be able to play that perfect half like you did against Oregon, but I'm going to ride with the hot hand. Give me Ohio State.
Big surprise from our surrogate Ohio State. I actually like this to be slightly more low scoring than people think, kind of like both teams in the low 20s, maybe mid 20s.
I did not have that.
I just think that for some reason, I think this is the game, and everybody's talking about like Texas not being them like. All of a sudden, we've knocked Texas down like three notches in a lot of people's heads because they played the close game, that both the technically the close games, if you want to call the Clemson game close, that Quinn Ewers hasn't looked the same. Sark's had a couple of questionable performances down the stretch in terms of the play calling. Who knows what the kicking situation is.
Oh dear
I'm
Lord.
not, I it's just I'm not ready to call this Texas team yet dead yet. And I think Ohio State is going to have their Ohio State performance. I like them to win the game. I think Texas covers 27-24
I
Buckeyes.
had a 38-27 game where, like I said, I think Ohio State jumps out early, and then it's just a trade scores later on, and they can never get close enough to make it something. And the last thing I want to say, just because I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about the fact that I have an OSU Penn State matchup in the final, if that happens, do you think Fox calls someone and says, "Yeah, we have to put this game at noon, and we need Gus and Joel on the call"?
They would. What would be the worst? So now I'm thinking as a Michigan fan, what do you want Ohio State to do? Because you beat them this year, but you obviously don't want them to win it all. You want them to win this game and then lose to tragically to Penn State, probably, because you still probably don't like Notre Dame that much, even though that's kind of not really a rivalry anymore. Is that accurate? Would you think that's what's in the head of a Michigan fan?
I try not to put myself in the head of a Michigan fan very often, so I don't know.
Fair.
I'm sure they probably want Ohio State to lose as soon as possible.
True. I get, yeah.
I don't know. I can't
Yeah.
envision that rivalry.
How, like, I also think of the Penn State Ohio State rivalry is just like how amazing that would be. You could also like play the argument for whoever wins that game. It's just like, oh, that one doesn't count. They had to play James Franklin. Oh, that one doesn't count. They had to play Ryan Day.
Yeah.
The winner never gets over the hump because they only beat the other one.
You're not wrong. I mean, you want to look at how broken college football is. We might be looking at a Ryan Day, James Franklin national championship.
Yeah, but how broken like is it? I like actually this is well, now we're just getting into the point I made last week about how like was there really a top dog? Like you thought it was Oregon, they went out and got smoked. Like that's
I just
I don't
meant it
know.
from a serial choker standpoint.
Oh well, yeah. And it's crazy that they're both here. But like I said, Penn State hasn't played a big game, so
No, they have not.
choke. All right, let's anything else before we move on to the professionals who do it?
No, let's get to the Lions.
Lions rolling down the field. Lions statement win on Sunday night with all the lights on them, 31-9. They are your NFC North champions for the second straight year. They'll be the one seed in the NFC Championship for the first time ever in the NFC Championship. Sorry, in the NFC playoffs for the first time ever. The playoffs run through Detroit. Let's get into the actual game though. Ugly is how I'll call the start, even for the Lions.
Oh yeah. Very reserved play calling to begin with on the Detroit side. Sam Darnold on the flip side was horrific. That's one of the worst quarterback performances I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Those overthrows, especially in the first half, I'm not sure there was ever a pass he didn't overthrow. Again, some of them were caught, but even the ones that were, the receivers had to struggle, fight, and jump out of their shoes just to get to it. Thank God for that because, like I said, we started very slow on offense. I think it was what 10-9 or 13-9 because we got that free field goal at the end.
Yeah.
Whatever that score was, or 17, I don't even know. But pathetic. On the offensive side, on the flip side, on the defensive side, Alex Anzalone and Amik Robertson, not just legacy games by their own standards, those were Hall of Fame performances. Anzalone coming back from the broken arm, plays all but one snap. He's
Have you seen
rushing.
his forearm? It
Yeah, he's
looks like a football.
it does look like football, but he's rushing the passer, he's stopping the run, he's in TJ Hawkinson's shadow every single time TJ Hawkinson goes to run a route. Amik Robertson. This guy, I've never seen somebody clamp Justin Jefferson like that. Now, again, I understand that the passes were not great coming into Justin Jefferson from Darnold, but Robertson was right there with him the entire game. He was dropping interceptions, he was deflecting passes. I've never seen someone clamp Justin Jefferson like this. And so, some fun stats. I'm not going to call Justin Jefferson a Lions killer because he's an everybody killer. But in the 9 games Justin Jefferson's had prior to this one in his career against the Lions, he averaged 129 yards per game.
Jesus.
Amik Robertson held him to 3 catches, for 54 yards on 9 targets, and one of those, which was the quote unquote big play, came when Robertson fell down. I want to say a solid 40% of the yards that Justin Jefferson had all game were on one catch, and Robertson slipped and fell. It was incredible. Both of those guys, I was making some jokes with one of my friends at work who's a Vikings fan. I was like, I'm actually shocked that Anzalone and Amik Robertson didn't just shadow those two guys onto the plane and ride back to Minnesota with them. Because the entire game, you could not see one of those two players from Minnesota without seeing his shadow. It was incredibly impressive. I think that's the perfect game we could have seen. If somebody told you Sunday morning or Sunday early afternoon, hey, you're gonna hold this Minnesota team to 9 points, you'd say, get out of here, man. That's not possible. This is a great offense. We know how banged up our defense is. It's not possible that that happens, but it did. Obviously, then the offense wakes up. Jahmyr Gibbs has his legacy game. Not even a call to coming out party. Just like 4 touchdowns. NFL leader for touchdowns in a, for this upco for this season, breaks Barry
Brian's record.
Sanders' record for touchdowns in a season. So it was incredible. I guess the only real complaints I could have is Ben Johnson on 4th and inches. Why don't we try the quarterback sneak? What are we doing taking a play action pass and trying to throw it 30 yards down the field? Like, it's kind of funny that Ben Johnson has every single play call ever invented, and even some of those not invented, in his bag, in the well of tricks, and he doesn't have the QB sneak. I thought that was funny. It is what it is. It didn't really hurt you, so that's cool. And yeah.
It's just we can talk on and on about the offenses. Like, it didn't even feel, I know the second half they just kind of moved the ball at will, but didn't even feel like that they were clicking on all cylinders the entire day. And you still went out and made a statement win like that. If anything, what impressed me the most was I thought the Lions in general played a B plus game and still found a way to kill their opponent. Now, I think most my personal take was I thought the Lions played well, but I thought the Vikings just threw up on
Oh,
themselves.
absolutely. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like we took their best shot and just completely countered it, because we didn't. The Vikings just weren't prepared. Maybe, I don't know if you saw some of these rumors, but maybe Kevin O'Connell was too busy trying to play PR politics and leaking rumors of, oh, some teams are going to trade for me and I want a pay raise because I want a new contract, instead of actually putting together a game plan for the Lions. But
Yeah, and like the stuff last week with the Packers, where they had Darnold, or 2 weeks ago with the Packers, where they had Darnold on his back and throwing the water. It just kind of felt like maybe they were a little looking forward, or a little like we already got over the hump type thing, and just didn't come out ready to play. And obviously, you mentioned Darnold especially. And now here's my question: is like, now you, it's crazy how one big game in a primetime spot like that changes your
changes every
perception
narrative.
on what was like people were calling like an MVP like candidate season before that. If he has a bad playoff game and they lose in LA, which is very possible, we'll get into the preview in a couple minutes. Does he get paid still
I
by the
would
Vikings?
I don't think the Vikings pay him long term at all. I think a franchise tag is on the cards, and it's a, hey, you're going to come back for one more season and you're going to play until a couple things go wrong, and then we're bringing in JJ. We'll see how JJ's knees are. Maybe he's not ready. I don't know physically what's going to happen with that, because that was kind of a shock injury out of nowhere. But I think in the Vikings' best interest, if they can make the salary cap work for that upcoming season, I think their best interest is to franchise tag him. I don't know what that'll look like. And obviously, you're right, so much will change based on what actually happens, because you're getting to the business end of it. You have a game against the Rams. I think the Rams are incredibly dangerous. We will get into the preview, but yeah, Darnold is playing for probably $200 million this postseason, whether it's from the Vikings or not.
And like, we'll get into my next question was more of a playoff thing. Let's cover the rest of the week. I don't like have a ton on this. Like, we'll I want to get to the coaches and Black Monday more. So before we get into playoffs and the actual games, the NFC South was decided yesterday, Sunday. The Panthers end their season on a good note, beating the Falcons, and then the Bucks kind of come out slow against a bad Saints team, end up getting a win there. I'm just looking through. The Bears end up beating the Packers. I don't know. Jordan Love gets hurt. Have you seen anything on what the prognosis is there?
They said he's day to day. They did lose Christian Watson to a torn ACL.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, not much there. I guess if you want to say the Patriots throw away the number one pick.
Yeah, right.
We'll get to, I think, the Patriots later when we talk about coach openings. But the two things I wanted to say, Bryce Young completed his sophomore resurgence from zero to hero.
Yeah, definitely.
He's finished that season playing better than any other second year quarterback. That's basically me calling out CJ Stroud, or at least
Yeah.
comparing him to CJ Stroud. He was better than Stroud to finish the season. Now I know Tank Dell dead, Stephon Diggs dead, banged up offense. Like, that's fine. Stroud's still missing basic throws that Bryce Young has kind of figured out, and he looks like he's in total command of that offense. The improved offensive line play with the two guards they signed. You have the play of Leggett, Jalen Coker, Phelan, Chuba Hubbard. And it looks like you might be able to put together a real offense in Carolina and then turn your focus to the defensive end. Again, I think I said this last week or 2 weeks ago when I was talking about the Cardinals losing in Carolina. It's like, it's still not a good team, but at least Carolina actually has their, can hang their hat on something and say, we have building blocks for a future. At least it's not them turning around to scramble again and say, oh shit, now we got to take another quarterback or trade up and we're scrambling again. So good for him, good for them. And the last thing I have, or two other things. Week 18, you mentioned it's typically ass from top to bottom just because most teams are either out completely or are locked into a playoff seed and are sitting starters. So you never really get meaningful games. I think for me, the biggest thing and the most entertaining thing is always seeing which guys are close to contract incentives
Yeah.
and then watching teams kind of go out of their way to get them that contract. Most notably, Mike Evans. You mean you're winning the game? There's 30 seconds left, and they're throwing passes, so he could get to 1,000 yards, tie Jerry Rice's record for 11 straight seasons of 1,000 yards or more. That also got him a $3 million bonus. The other one, which I thought was pretty funny, I don't know if you saw this, was the Buffalo Bills punter. Had a contract clause that said if you have 20 or more punts downed inside the 20, we'll give you, let's say, $250,000. I don't remember the exact number. But the Bills punt from the New England 35, just so they can get their punter a nice bonus. That was pretty cool. That's always nice to see. Again, teams going openly out of the way. Obviously, some guys, especially on the defensive end, will always kind of earn it by getting a sack or two, whatever might be needed, or a tackle. It's nice to see teams get the players their money. And that's it for the actual week. Anything else from you before we get to Black Monday?
No, I guess the only other like playoff thing implications. Bengals get it done on Saturday, only for the Broncos to absolutely destroy the Kansas City backups. Carson Wentz. Oof, that's bad. Hopefully Mahomes doesn't get hurt. That's all I gotta say there. But I was hoping for that game to at least have some like ounce of like drama, and there just wasn't any.
There was,
So
again, like I said, the teams don't care. They're playing for safety and to not kind of just come out flat or not get hurt, in the Kansas City Chiefs case. But to Black Monday.
Black Monday or Sunday in some cases.
Yeah, relatively quiet, to be honest. The only people who lost their jobs on Monday, specifically Jerod Mayo in New England, Doug Peterson in Jacksonville. I think the Doug Peterson one, everybody expected.
Yeah.
I think at face value, you probably sit there and say, oh my God, Jerod Mayo, how do you fire him after 1 year? But if you actually look at what was going on in New England, you look at how the players thought of him, how the fans thought of him, I think it was a decision that had to be made. I don't know if you saw the video of Christian Gonzalez talking about him getting fired, and he's trying to like give a professional answer of, oh, you know, these great moments and this and that. He's got the biggest smile on his face you could possibly imagine as he's talking. I think those players absolutely hated him. Gerard Mayo would call out players, assistant coaches in press conferences. I just don't think he had a good beat for what you really need to do as a head coach, and it's fine. You know, he's a first year guy. You say it was a learning on the moment thing, and that doesn't mean he can't be a head coach later down the line, but I think this was the correct move for New England.
I think it like, I wonder if like the way he got the job contributed to his like almost like insecurity in the role, and that how he kind of got the like swept like traitor, I was a Belichick guy, now I'm gonna take your job type thing, like sweeped him out of the rug, and then now I'm in, and now I have to like look out the same way I did for my assistants, or they're gonna do the same to me type thing. That was like the only thing I had to add was I wonder how much of that was going through his head in terms of like you said, mentioned some of the calling out of the coaches and the players and just almost like being very insecure in that role for just being there for one
I wouldn't
season.
say that. I mean, if I remember correctly, it was always kind of a plan that he would be the succession. So I don't think there was something of, oh my God, he like led a coup against Belichick or anything. I just think that he wasn't prepared for kind of the differences between running one side of the ball and being the forefront of an entire kind of organization and
Right.
being the guy who has to answer questions, respond to responsibility or face the responsibilities and have everything pinned on him. And I don't think he really handled it properly. And again, it's a learning thing. It's his first year. He's a young coach. That this doesn't mean he can't do it again. Just go rebuild yourself as a defensive coordinator somewhere, and we'll see you in 2, 3 years if that's how good you really are.
He's also young enough
Oh,
to where.
absolutely. The Doug Peterson thing, not shocking at all. That has to go. Honestly, it's more shocking than Trent Baalke, the GM, kept his job. I don't know if you saw. Shad Khan, the owner, was like, yeah, the new head coach is going to report directly to me. And so I sit there and it's like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, I don't know how that works. And I guess if you
It
want
never
to be,
has. It never has. It never does. When the GM doesn't get his guy and they're not hired at the same time, it never works.
well, though that, and I was just going to say, like, I've never heard of a head coach directly reporting to the owner. The head coach
Yeah,
reports to the
right.
GM.
That, yeah.
And I guess in Baalke's case, if you want to be fair, Ryan Thomas Jr., superstar wide receiver right off
Right.
the bat. Trayvon Walker has made me eat my words. He's put together back-to-back seasons of, I think, double-digit sacks for only the second time in Jags history. He's been great. I think maybe that's what Baalke could kind of hang his hat on, and maybe what he kept his job with was just like, look, maybe you hate the guy I hired, but you can't dispute the fact that I've put together some real talent on this team, and we just wholly unperformed because the coach is an idiot.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, Antonio Pierce, it wasn't Black Monday, it was Black Tuesday for him, where he loses his job about 2 hours ago from when we're talking right now. I think that's probably also the right move. I think he probably found it himself in a little over his head.
Yeah, I don't like, I'm not as, I'm a bit more surprised by the Antonio Pierce thing, to be honest. It seemed like he was a guy at the opposite of Gerard Mayo that never really lost the locker room, didn't have a young, wasn't given a young quarterback to develop, like wasn't put in any type of a situation or pressure to win this season by any stretch of the imagination. And I do agree with you that I think he was a little in over his head, and it maybe got worse, much worse than people would have thought. But to be a one and done, I want to say I read something that there's only like 10 to 12, like 10 to 15 of them ever, like, or in the modern day football. It's not common, doesn't happen every year. And I just wouldn't put him in that group of people. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, that's fair. And I know one of the things we were talking before this, you mentioned, is there a Tom Brady influence there of now that he's Mr. Minority Owner and Mr. Face, maybe he sits there and he thinks, oh, well, we can do better. I don't know anything about that. I think you're probably right. Is it harsh? Yes, but
Well,
it's
my
a
thing
harsh
with the
business.
Brady, and I understand. My thing with the Brady thing is like that team being in Vegas now prints money,
Oh.
and Davis has not showed any inclination that he cares if they win the last five seasons since they, or whatever it's been since they've been in Vegas, because the team now prints money there. That why all of a sudden are we making these type, like, I don't know. It's the first movies really made that's like that. He should have fired Gruden way earlier, and he had to wait for, the scandal to come out. Like, I don't know.
I
Just
agree.
feels like it's different or something changed. And one of the greatest quarterbacks ever happened to buy a minority stake. He owns like 10% of the team. It's not that small of a share.
That's
So.
actually massive, considering these franchises are worth billions, and
Yeah.
that's a lot in that case. But I mean, Kevin Stefanski keeps his job in Cleveland. Brian Callahan, the Titans head coach, keeps his job even though the GM gets fired, which I don't love that dynamic. Like you said, you hire a general manager, he finds a head coach that shares his vision for a team, and together they find a quarterback. That's how real organizations do it. That's what the Detroit Lions did. Shout out.
Traded
Maybe
for a
they will get
quarterback.
what?
Traded for a
Oh,
quarterback.
found. I didn't say drafted, I said found.
Yeah,
And
okay.
to be fair,
They
maybe the
drafted
plan.
Hendon Hooker.
Yeah, look, maybe the plan was never going to be Jared Goff long term. Maybe that wasn't their guy and it turned into it.
True.
Obviously, there is the concept of the idea, but you still have to hire the right guys and the pieces have to fall into place. But it's just that's how I think it should be done. I
I
don't
agree.
understand why you fired the GM who hired this coach, but decided the coach is suddenly good enough, because it sounds like you're just setting up this coach for another bad season with a rookie quarterback, and then you're going
Right.
to fire the head coach, and then you're going to torpedo the rookie quarterback's growth,
Yep.
and
Agreed.
then you're Chicago. And speaking of a team that's about to do the same exact thing, your New York Football Giants are kind of potentially playing with fire. Both Joe Shane and Brian Daboll are brought back. I know you hate one of them, love the other, so I'll let you take over and talk a little bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't say love, and now that we've like talked like ourselves into like the don't fire the GM and keep the coach thing. Maybe I'm speaking out of, my ass right now, but like I think
Speak from the heart or the
the
ass.
hard not the Hard Knocks documentary to me showed that the GM is way in over his head, more than any other GM in this league, and clearly cares, I think, a little bit too much about what other people think of his decisions, and not enough about is this decision the right decision for a football team. And that goes back to how they handled the Saquon thing, how they've handled Daniel Jones, giving Daniel Jones the contract. But now I'm going to go to the I that's all I have to say about him. He should have been fired. Terrible move not to fire. With Brian Daboll, I just feel like I'm just being super hypocritical now saying that I think they should keep
Say
him.
it.
But I think they should keep him. I think he's a good coach. I think he knows the offense. It's been up and down with the media, sometimes with the locker room. I know the Daniel Jones thing was an absolute mess and how they handled it. There was a mess at quarterback. Like, you come out and start Tommy DeVito over Drew Lock and basically say, okay, we are purposely losing. And then at the end of the season, start playing Drew Lock and win games and lose yourself the number one overall pick. So it doesn't really make sense to me. I know that's not probably all Brian Daboll. That's probably someone else making that decision. But I think Brian Daboll, given a fresh start, can make something out of the Giants. I just don't think the GM is going to be able to give him and put him in that situation in like a short enough time frame for him to
But can I
actually.
give you a potential problem? I don't
Yeah.
think he got a fresh start. He got one more year. And the problem, and I don't want
But he got
to.
one more year with what? They like with what roster? Like a roster that wasn't expected to win.
But that's the problem. They're gonna bring him back and say, yeah, this guy's here. They're gonna suck again. I mean, you've seen the schedule. It's brutal.
It's brutal. You have so many holes on the offensive line. You don't have a quarterback yet. You're probably drafting one.
And that's my point. You're gonna do what the Titans just were about to do. You're gonna
Yeah.
suck again, and then you're gonna fire Brian Daboll, and then you're gonna fire Joe Shane, and then you're gonna sit there, and John Mara is gonna be like, "What's going on here?" And that's where it's like, I think for me, it's more of a the Giants were in a position to reset, because you're right, this roster sucks. They are not in direct position to draft a quarterback because there's really only two quarterbacks that seem to
Yeah.
even be remotely worth a damn, and they're picking three. So it probably involves a trade with the Browns if you want to get your quarterback. But you have cap space, and it just seems like this would have been a great time to, like I said, reset, start with a GM. He gets a coach. Coach gets a quarter. They work together to find a quarterback one way or another. And it seems like you're going to have two guys who are in cover their ass mode and going to make some stupid decisions to help in the short term that hurt in the long term.
That makes a lot of sense. I don't like the idea that Dable's a fireable coach because I don't think it's his fault the last
I
three
don't
seasons.
disagree. I'm not, again, I don't think that he's, I'm trying to pick like one of the, I don't think he's the Nathaniel Hackett,
Right.
but
Oh, yeah.
if you're gonna sit here and talk about Brian Daboll and a future as a coach, I think it has to be outside of the New York Giants, where you, like you said, he can get an actual fresh start. Because just because Mara says you guys are coming back, I don't think that suddenly means, hey man, you now have a nice 3-year runway ahead of you. Like
Yeah.
we've just forgotten what happened in the past. And I
And
think
it's
the
like
Giants are setting themselves up for to kind of find themselves in a nice little purgatory.
it is such an interesting dynamic that like we're not gonna fire you, but you're not on the same timetable of our goals and what our roster goals are
Yeah.
long term. So that's that like that's just another thing that teams like the Giants, like the Bears. I'd even throw in the other New York team in this now,
Oh
like the
dear.
Jets do.
Jets are in all sorts of hell. But get to the playoffs, preview
Let's
some of
get
those
to the
games.
playoffs. Saturday, about as predictable as one could be. The Texans will be playing on Saturday afternoon. I saw something that was like it went through like the last 15 years of the playoffs and the Saturday afternoon game for the divisional round
It's
had the
always them.
Texans more often than not. And that's like including the years they didn't make the playoff. Every single year they've made the playoff, they've played in this Saturday afternoon game. They'll host the Chargers. The Chargers are a 3-point favorite at home. I mean, I
You
think
mean on the
the
road?
Texans are what?
You mean on the road?
Yeah, on the road. Sorry. They are a 3-point favorite on the road. There we go. The Texans are kind of like the Texas Longhorns in that they're the team that we've knocked off, has no chance. Like, and they, I'll be honest, they don't. Like, they haven't shown enough consistency on offense. Their defense doesn't give me anything that I want to write home about to where I trust Jim Harbaugh in these games now. It's a weird thing to say that I think the Chargers actually. I'm going to talk about this with the Rams because the Rams are my NFC team, but there I gave it away. But of my not division winners, I guess the Rams are division winners. So that kind of moots my point. Of the not top three seeds, the Chargers are my team to make that could make a run.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they're better than the Texans. The betting line is an indicator. You're favored by 3 on the road in a
Yeah.
playoff game. Just give me the Chargers. I don't really have much to say there. Yeah, I trust the coaching staff. You mentioned the Harbaugh thing. We hate him for what he did at Ann Arbor, but that's never been a denial of the fact that he's an incredible football coach, especially at the NFL level. Give me the Chargers.
The other game on Saturday, the night game, Steelers had Baltimore. Baltimore are 9.5 point favorites.
Crazy.
Which is crazy to me because the Steelers and the Ravens play notoriously close games, but I hate being like quick again with this, but like I do think this is gonna be what the Steelers have been for the last, I don't know, almost decade now, in that they're gonna start off hot. And they're going to fall off at the end, and then they're going to lose by a lot in the wild card round. And I think this is any nothing different. The only thing the Steelers have going for them is a Russell Wilson game out of his ass, and the fact that they've seen
Not
this
gonna
team
happen.
twice already.
Yeah, I actually have a I could have an entire Steelers topic on my own, because I think they're a pretty fascinating topic for NFL standards of, do you want to be good for 10 years or do you want to be great for 3 years?
Right.
Because Mr. I don't go sub 500 Mike Tomlin doesn't go sub 500, but he also hasn't won a playoff game since 2016, which is crazy to think about. This Steelers team reverted to classic Steelers, great defense. They can win you any game, but an utterly useless offense. Russell Wilson was this revelation for a month after taking over for Justin Fields with this moon ball, and then that kind of died out. George Pickens, we talked about the game with Cincinnati. We didn't actually talk about what happened. George Pickens put together a Hall of Shame performance, one catch on six targets, three drops, two of them which were horrible. And then he also tried fighting one of his own fans. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, he was sitting there jawing with a fan on the sideline. He's throwing, not throwing hands, but I think he was flipping him the bird, saying the magic words that you can't say. So just classic Steelers, everything falls apart. And it's, would you rather be good for 10, 15 years, win nothing, or would you rather be great for 3 years and actually have a chance at winning something? Give me the
I'm
Ravens.
like, that's gotta blow up in their face eventually,
I know.
right?
I mean, I feel like there's rumor. The last couple years, we've had rumors of Mike Tomlin fired, Mike Tomlin fired, Mike Tomlin fired. And I think sooner rather than later, that does become a thing where the Rooneys just say, look, Mike, thank you very much, but we would rather be the Legion of Boom Seahawks and have that 3 year run with a chance at multiple Super Bowls than be what you've done for us because you haven't actually won anything for us in 15 years. Thank you
Right.
for that Super Bowl, but that was 15 years ago.
But also, like, he hasn't had a quarterback in, I'm going to say, the what, 4 years since Ben Roethlisberger has retired, and
Yeah.
like the last 3 years of his career, too.
Sure. I
So,
mean, but where are you going to get one? You're not drafting high enough to get one.
yeah.
What do you, they
Saw
don't
Kenny
just, they
Pickett.
don't grow on trees. So,
They tried to.
yeah. So that's just where it's like, I think the Steelers are stuck in that. Just like, it's a royal franchise. They're always going to be good with Mike Tomlin. He's a great head coach. He's, people obviously respect the ever-loving shit out of him. It's just, they are capped. Ravens by a million.
In the Sunday, the 1 o'clock slate, Broncos head to Buffalo to play the Bills. Bills are an 8.5 point favorite. I think the Broncos could be a little frisky. Like, Sean Payton's been there, but you're gonna have to go to Buffalo with a rookie quarterback, and I just like think that's as simple as it gets,
Too
unfortunately.
much. Josh Allen playing too good. Give me the Bills.
Yeah, I'm gonna take the Bills to cover too. They seem to be on a mission. The afternoon slate, kind of, I'm gonna call it my what I think is probably the most fun game. Packers at the Eagles. Eagles 4.5 point favorites. We mentioned earlier, no Christian Watson for this game. Jordan Love still day to day. It's only Tuesday though, so who
Jalen Hurts is in
knows.
concussion protocol.
Is he still? That
Still
was
in
kind of the question.
protocol.
I know we talked about this last week on I kind of asked you. I was like, so like we haven't really talked about like, is Jalen Hurts gonna play? And we were like, yeah, well, we think so. But if he's still in concussion protocol on Tuesday, I'd imagine that's gotta be somewhat of mind games that we don't actually know if he's like, they can just say he's in concussion
Yeah.
protocol. Like,
Yeah, that would have to be the world's greatest concussion if, like, 3 weeks later, you're still in the protocol. But we'll see. I think the Packers are a little bit on the overrated side.
I agree.
I don't think they have enough to compete with this Eagles team, especially in Philadelphia. Now, maybe this all changes again if Jalen Hurts isn't playing and it's Kenny
Pick it.
Pickett or, God forbid, whoever that third stringer was.
A key or whatever.
Tanner
McKee.
McKee, are you
Whatever it
kidding me?
was.
Oh dear
Yeah.
Lord. But yeah, maybe this prediction changes if that's who's being trotted out at quarterback, but I give me the Eagles. I think they're just too good.
Yeah, like the Packers. Solid defensive team, but I just and Jordan, I like have kind of slowly changed my tune on Jordan Love, but they aren't explosive enough on offense in any stretch. And they run the ball well with Josh Jacobs, and they have a good, like, kind of mix of guys that are solid at the receiver position, but like they just like they don't wow you me enough offensively to go on a deep run.
Yeah, I think Jordan Love, as we talked about, overrated. I think he's not what his contract says he's supposed to be.
Oh, I completely agree with that. He's like kind of in that like slightly like
He's in the $45 million range, not
He's
55 million
like
dollars.
just deserving of a franchise quarterback tag.
Yeah,
Just.
$45 million range, not 55.
The Sunday night game, Commanders at the Bucks. Bucks 3-point favorite. I actually think this number should be more at home at night. I, for some reason, love the Bucks. I think Baker Mayfield, you watched what he did scrambling around the pocket on Sunday. He's going to kind of, I don't like, it's not team of destiny vibes, so I don't have them going that really that far. But with the weapons, with the way Baker Mayfield's playing, and I hate overgeneralizing rookie quarterbacks like this, but Jaden Daniels needs to play perfect offensively for them to have a shot for me. And I just don't think a rookie quarterback on the road can be perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the way you think, but this is the game where I root for an upset because, for Lions purposes, I think this is the best scenario for us if we can get to play the Commanders in the divisional round. You mentioned the Baker Mayfield thing. I think I said it about a month ago. He's America's favorite player. If you're not an Oklahoma fan or Texas fan or Ohio State fan, whatever it was from the college standpoint, he has completely revived his career. He plays with fire. He plays with what looks to be true, genuine enjoyment for the sport. It's awesome to watch. But, and this is where I'm going to differ with you, Jaden Daniels has also been electric, and I think that he will lead the Commanders to a victory in Tampa.
Okay, so you're just going with what you want to happen.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, like Jaden Daniels, as good as he's been, has had too many rookie moments for me to trust him in this.
I'll see you in a week.
And the final game, Monday night, Vikings at the Rams. It's what Vegas says will be the tightest. Minnesota, a 1-point favorite on the road. Rams have been kind of deemed this wild card deep run team by everybody, and I see it personally. I also could see the Vikings, after kind of getting embarrassed on the national stage, coming out and really wanting to show for something.
I think the last part you make is massive. Had they come out and, let's say, lost a close game to the Lions and they come out dejected, that's one thing, and maybe the Rams can jump on them. But they didn't even show up to the Detroit game. So I think there is going to be an edge for them there. This should be the best game. Like you said, the spread also indicates that. That's why it's the Monday Night Football game. Two teams, two offenses that absolutely fly. Minnesota, you're probably hoping that Sam Darnold's pumpkin game, you got it out of the system and you get the Sam Darnold from the first 16 games back at your actual quarterback spot. There is a little bit of the question mark of the Rams had a chance to be the three seed if they would have cared about their last game against Seattle, and they said, you know what, screw it, we'd rather just get our guys healthy. We're sitting everyone, lost to Seattle, lost out on the three seed, and now we're going to be, I say, rewarded. They're now punished with having to play a better team. I go back and forth on this. I really, really do. Fuck it, give me the Rams.
I'm also going to pick the Rams. I like there is something about it where I'm not truly in a, and I know it's like we
It's
just
Sam
said,
Darnold. Like,
it's yeah,
it's
it's like there's
you
just
mentioned
something
it.
about them where I don't truly trust them to
You
play.
mentioned it. He has played at an incredible, almost near MVP level all season. But we saw the pumpkin game last week, and now it's in the back of our minds. Here comes New York Jets Sam Darnold. Here comes I can't process Sam Darnold. Here comes I hold on to the ball too long Sam Darnold. And it comes right back. And it's kind of one of those things where it's like first impressions last. And Sam Darnold's first impression in the NFL was what happened in New York. And no matter what he just did for an entire season, you revert back to that form, and everyone's like, ha ha ha, look at Sam Darnold. Give me the Rams.
Glad we agree on that. Should we pick a Super Bowl champion before the playoffs start?
Detroit Spooky Lions getting healthier by the minute. David Montgomery's playing in the divisional round. Carlton Davis will be back. Everything goes through Detroit. Give me the Lions.
I'm going to take a pick of what I actually think and not how my heart is feeling.
Oh, I'm the
I'm going to
Kansas
take.
City Chiefs. Look at me. I think outside the box.
I didn't say that. I
What
just said what I think is going to happen.
do you think is going to happen, Connor?
The Kansas City Chiefs are going to be the first team to three. No, I'm kidding. I actually think this is Josh Allen's year, and he's going to prove to people why he's a slightly better candidate for the MVP than Lamar Jackson. Give me the Bills over the Lions in the Super Bowl.
I love it. So if you've made it this far, thank you very much. Please make sure to tell Connor that he's a communist for picking against the Detroit Lions. I will leave everyone with a go Lions.
Lions, baby.